Notice how my transition there, the segue into laid-back California lifestyle. It's my Wild Card Wednesday interview with several categories from which I have to choose. Sometimes just the ordinary folks you meet and know every day have the best stories. They make the best guests. I have two categories. One is compatible couples, folks that you meet. They're married. They're happy. They've been together forever, like Jim and Jenny McCoy. How do they do it? Others, Santa Barbara survivors. How did they do it? How did they live here in paradise on a boat or something? In any event, we have Ray Doherty with us. Ramolin, right? Your real name?
Yes. Good morning, Baron.
Good morning, Ray. Welcome aboard. You're a Santa Barbara boy, tried and true, right?
Well, I was born in the Mission City of San Fernando, but moved into Santa Barbara about 20 years ago.
Okay. So you're one of us now. Fancy yourself a writer? And you've written some stuff?
Well, I've had the privilege of having some of my manuscripts selected for publication.
Really? I've got one of them here. It's a book out we'll be talking about called Real People, Real Stories, The Mystery of Fate, Common Coincidence or Divine Intervention. You would be one of a perfect guest for the Saturday afternoon Tell Me Your Story, the Richard Dugan Hour, because he gets stories like this. And maybe Pam Oastley, too. There's Dugan now, walking past. So we're going to get into your little portion that you credit Grandpa with a pivotal moment in your life. You also write, what was it you called him?
Oh, my writing experiences began with my experiences as a registered nurse.
Oh, yeah.
I was a critical care specialist in an industry that was in its infancy when I started working in it back in 1971.
Got it.
And I used to write abstract.
Abstract. I should have written that word.
Research projects that under the auspices of the medical directors I was allowed to do.
Okay, it's almost like technical writing in a way.
Yes, it was very technical in nature, yeah. Very concise.
I saw something you brought to lunch on Friday once that you'd written, and it was easy to read. Are you working now? Are you still a nurse?
I am retired, though I still hold an active nurse license as an RN.
Not married?
Oh, yes, very much married.
Oh, you are married.
My lovely wife, Connie, and I have been married for 27 years.
Good Lord. See, this is why I find out on the air. I probably should have known that going in, but you never bring her, or she doesn't come to the lunch, but then none of the guys get their wives there very often on Friday.
And I credit her for my very first story to be published. It was published in the Chicken Soup series, Love Stories.
Chicken Soup? You mean, what's it, Canfield?
Uh-huh.
You're part of his series of Chicken Soup for the what? For the outgoing nurse.
That was about how I met my wife, Connie, 27 years ago.
Been married that long.
Uh-huh.
All right. Compatible couples. My first category.
Yes, there you go.
And Santa Barbara survivor. Because you're living here.
Yes.
And you have for 20 years.
Yes.
And you're not going anywhere else.
No plans to go anywhere else.
You have family elsewhere?
I have two sons.
Two boys.
I'm very proud of them.
Where are they?
David lives in Ventura, but works here in town. He has a degree in architecture.
Okay.
And my son, John Robert, he is a graduate of the Naval Academy, class of 2000, and he is a lieutenant commander in San Diego right now.
Whoa, on a ship?
He's actually based at Camp Pendleton right now.
Ah, I thought that was a Marine base.
They have a close connection.
I guess they do down there. It's all represented. So this is where everybody in the Duarte clan goes for vacation, up to see Dad,
yes,
Ray, and
Dad
Connie.
Dad and Grandpa.
Grandpa. How many grandchildren do you have?
One.
Oh, same here. I got one. But you've managed to survive here, so you qualify in both camps. And you join us. I guess you met Steve Brown.
Absolutely.
My friend... of all these years, you're still in Adams Mobile Home Service. Did you know him when he had the little business?
Yes, I met him through the Elks organization, but I visited his shop on Moda.
Man knows his stuff. Got a very intelligent group. You were just telling me you love that little crowd.
No, I love it.
Fun. Well, we're going to kick around. I want to get to this early, and maybe we'll come back to it from time to time. It's a compilation of miracles, I guess. What they are, different stories, true stories, written by local folks here in town?
Actually,
you had your copy of the book and you gave me this one.
Arlene Uslander lives in Sonora now.
Okay. She edited the book.
She and her co-author, Brenda Warnecka, she lives in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Did they? Were they ever here?
Not yet. One has a grandson who's going to be attending UCSB.
Okay, so they decided, Brenda Warnecka and Arlene Uslander, who are not in Santa Barbara, but they decided to compile a bunch of stories of brushes with miracles that are true stories.
Yes, they've been able to put together an anthology of stories about fate, and how I became connected with them was through my mentor and close friend, Sally Franz, who herself is an author. And word gets around, especially through the Internet. And
sure does.
When I published Forever Smile in Chicken Soup, shortly after that, I received an email from Arlene introducing herself to me. She's a retired teacher. She had a theme about fate.
She contacted you.
Yes, she did, and asked if I had any material that might meet the criteria that they were looking for. And I immediately thought of the story I had written about my grandfather.
His name was?
Refugio Duarte.
Refugio Duarte. How did you say it?
Refugio.
I have been saying it right. Everybody else says it wrong. Let's talk about the canyon west of town.
Yes, it's Refugio.
They say Refugio. And look at it. It's a G, which is like Gila Monster, H sound in Spanish. Good Lord. I'm going to take a break, Ray, and we're going to tell that story and give people a reason to go buy the book. Find it. I assume it's on sale.
It's on Amazon and other websites, and I believe it's some of the bookstores, too.
The Mystery of Fate, Common Coincidence or Divine Intervention. Page 93, you find Ray's story, Fate Glistens. And we're going to tell it. We won't read it. You'll have to buy your own copy to find out the details. But something, your late grandfather, your beloved Refugio, he figured into your life somehow, ironically, if you will. Ray is here. Connie is home listening. Possibly the rest of you are. 564-1290. If you have a question, give us a call. Love to hear from you. This is AM 1290. Hey, Ray.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for coming down and seeing me.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for joining us at our lunch. You're having a good time there, right?
Absolutely.
Well, the man that brought you, to whom you sit to the left of every Friday at Farmer Boys on the Line, Steve Brown. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Speaking of...
Say hello. Tell you I'm listening.
Good for you. Thank you. Speaking of compatible couples, who could be an example for all of us.
Yes.
Except now that I'm understanding everybody sitting at that table except me and maybe Trotter have wives. Don Brown's the only one that brings his wife. But she doesn't say much, does she?
She possibly brings him.
That could be, yeah. And they have come from time to time. Your wife, Connie, is due. You know that.
She is due. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
What's going on? How did you meet this man? At the lodge, I guess, right?
Yes, you bet. That was... not unlike stories in that book. It was a synchronistic event.
Okay, well...
I agree.
Synchronistic event. I love that. Synchronicity.
Yes.
That's a word that you don't hear too often people try to say. But it definitely kind of... It's ironic is a way of saying it, isn't it? Or maybe being it fate.
It's a clear understanding that nothing is by accident.
Okay. Well, fate's going to glisten on us, and if you have any questions later on or comments, by all means, buzz me back, will you?
You bet. Thanks.
I'll see you at lunch for sure, Friday.
Sure. You bet.
The man. All right, fate glistens. Give me the story about Refugio, your beloved grandfather, the father of Salvador, your dad.
Yes.
Has he passed on?
Yes, he has.
All right. When did this happen, and what happened?
It's February 9th, 1971.
Okay, and, a few years ago. You were a younger man then.
Yes, I was 5 months away from graduating from the nursing program at Los Angeles Valley College.
Okay.
We had lectures every Monday and every Friday at the college, but on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, we would meet our instructors at our assigned medical centers. I was assigned to Olive View Medical Center. in Sylmar. And on Tuesday morning, February 9th, I was supposed to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, my dad's dad, Refugio, my grandfather, passed away the Friday before. And so I had explained to my instructors on Monday morning that I would need to be with my family and therefore excusing myself from attending classes at the hospital.
Was this a funeral planned?
Yes, it was a requiem mass
service
and burial on Tuesday morning.
Got it.
As it turns out, rather than being at Olive View Medical Center, and there was this ambulance port that hospital would park its ambulances under, and you would have to walk underneath this to enter the first floor of the building, which was about 9-10 stories tall. But at approximately 6 o'clock in the morning, a 6.5 earthquake hit.
The big one.
Yes. But rather than being there, underneath that ambulance port, which did collapse and kill two people that were running out of the building, I might have been there or I might have been inside the building, the first floor of which disappeared. The fact
collapsed,
that,
pancake yeah, down.
The fact that my grandfather had passed on and I was attending his funeral, I was not there. But it is a day, I can tell you, that I deeply impacted me and my entire family, one that none of us will ever forget. It is described as a moderate quake, a 6.5, as compared to the much larger ones you've been reading about in the
sure.
news recently. But I'll tell you that when you are within 5 miles of the epicenter of a 6.5, the shaking is intense, and it feels like the world's going to come to an end, and it is something you will never forget. Those 20 seconds is a lifetime.
Where were you when it hit?
I was sleeping in bed. I was sleeping in.
Oh, you were still sleeping?
And when I woke up, I was in midair.
Oh, my God.
Because it just threw me up into the air, and when I landed half on the floor and half on the bed. And it hit like a hammer, and then with severe side-to-side shaking.
Did they go on to have the services?
No, as a matter of fact, quite a few things happened that morning. All of the radio stations went off the air. I had the good sense of not getting on any of the freeways, but using surface streets to get to my family, driving through the streets of San Fernando was the moment I felt real fear. Because I saw something that I had never seen before.
Oh, yeah.
Entire facades had been sliced off.
Yep.
And you could see inside like you would a dollhouse type of thing. And
yep.
Broken streets with spires of water and fire. It was like a war zone. There were four hospitals that were destroyed by this earthquake. The east wing of the San Fernando Veterans Hospital had completely collapsed, and most of the deaths of that day occurred there.
Really?
Approximately 50. But the other hospitals, including Olive View and Holy Cross and Pacoima Lutheran Hospitals, had to be evacuated. Kaiser Hospital in Panorama City had the emergency communication radio system there, based there. It, however, was destroyed by a beam that fell upon it, and therefore there was no communications to help coordinate which hospitals should be evacuated and where to. The end result was there were ambulances carrying patients from one hospital to another, not knowing that the other hospital was being evacuated as well.
Good Lord.
The Van Orman Dam, which most... most people didn't even know it existed until that morning. But it threatened to fail. And so much of the San Fernando Valley, just in front of that reservoir, was evacuated.
Is that water that's pumped over the hill from the aqueduct?
Yes.
Okay, and it's stored there in Van Nuys, I think, is it?
It's in the Mission Hills
okay,
area.
Okay, near there. We passed it. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't fail, though.
No, it didn't. They started pumping that water out immediately, and I could see from archive video footage that the wall was about to fail, but because they were able to pump that water out, it didn't.
You were right in the middle of it. You were in the San Fernando Valley when the Northridge earthquake hit.
Yes.
And I assume, obviously, they at least postponed and aborted that, what was it, a diploma
it was,
or a commencement you were going to
oh,
have?
Well, that was, actually, the earthquake hit in February. The graduation was in
June.
In June.
Oh, so what were you going there for? What were you scheduled to go there for that you had to?
I was doing what we used to call lab work.
Well,
we would study at the college, the didactic information, and then we would apply our skills under the observation of an instructor at the hospital. And that's why I had to be at the hospital that morning.
Was that your last quarter or last semester?
That was it was about 5 months away from graduating.
So you went on to graduate
half
a year later. And you'd been there going to that school how long, right?
Well, I was in their RN program, which is a 2-year program, but I was also in their LVN program before that. So I have about 3.5 years of nurses training. And what's really kind of interesting is as I think back, those 2 years in the RN program, I was taking all of my general education courses at the same time I was taking my nursing courses, which was like cramming 4 years of education into two.
You were getting a high school diploma?
No.
GED?
No, I was getting an Associate of Arts.
Oh, I see. Okay, you were in
science.
College.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What's the difference between RN and LVN?
An LVN is a licensed
vocational
nurse, requires usually 1 to 1.5 years of training, and their skills are not as expanded as that of an RN. They are allowed to administer some medications, but primarily the RN does all the IV work and
drawing
manage,
blood, things like that.
Management.
And so you got licensed for both?
I got my LVN license first because I had a need to build a career ladder because that was the only way I was going to get through college.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually started working as a nursing assistant or an orderly in 1967. And I did that for 2 years while I was getting my license as an LVN. And then when I got my license as an LVN, I worked as an LVN until I was able to finish my RN training and get my license for that.
People, just clarify it to me, that would want to be a doctor, for example, go a different route. They don't start by being an LVN and then work up to RN and then go on to medical school.
That is an excellent question. For me, my ultimate goal was to go into medicine.
Oh, to be a doctor.
Yes.
Dr. Borten. I like that sound.
But the thing is that life has its challenges. And many of them could be financial. I'm not making any excuses. I found that working as a nurse, I was closer to the patient. This is not to usurp the wonderful things that physicians are able to do. And they get these marvelous educations, and they do marvelous things. An RN cannot perform his or her duties without the direction of the physician, without a physician's order.
Mm-hmm.
So we depend greatly. But then they also depend on us for what we see at the bedside that will help promote the care of the patient.
Well, there's a part of me that says, darn, you hung it up too soon. We're short. We have a shortage of nurses. Have you heard that? That's one area I don't know about in this town. We probably have plenty at Cottage and around. But there are certain areas where there is definitely a field of opportunities in nursing.
As long as I have been in the nursing field, we've always had a shortage of nurses. It's a tough field to
you
stay
can still
in.
Do it, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, you're not a spring chicken, but you're not an old guy either.
No, I am retired because of a series of operations, knee operations,
oh.
So I can't work.
Oh, you can't be on your feet.
No.
That's a big part of it,
yeah.
Isn't it? That's what it is. See, that's how I find out. I never would have gone there even if I had known that. So, you're on disability?
Yes.
And you have a lot of good memories, especially that earthquake.
Absolutely.
A lot of
memories that I like to think of, as my wife says, defining moments of your life.
And Fate Glistens is that story in the book. You're going to have to get a copy of it, The Mystery of Fate. Well, we're down to the last 30 seconds. You obviously give credit to the late Refugio Duarte for saving your life.
Yes.
By dying. Because you got around to, I assume, the services, right? Eventually.
Yes, they were rescheduled a few days later.
And you loved that man, didn't you? You knew him growing up.
I knew him very well, and he was a big part of my life, as so was my dad.
We'll be right back. Talking to Ramon, known as Ray Duarte, good friend of my friend Steve Brown and our whole Friday morning lunch gang, and has a little house over there. Do you own your home yet? Are you buying yet, or are you still renting?
No, we have a mortgage on it.
Oh, well, then you're buying.
Yeah, we're buying, yeah.
LVN and RN, and retired, hurt his knees, has got a great offering in the book, The Mystery of Fate, Common Coincidence or Divine Intervention. Real people, real stories. You said you'd read 70% of these in there.
Yes.
Some of which are represented by photos on the front page. Have you got your copy of the book?
Yes, the collage of photos that are representative of the stories.
There's the rosary beads. That's got to have a Catholic twist to it, I guess. There's a map of the Middle East. Jordan, Syria, Iraq, Saudi Arabia. I'm curious about that. There's an officer of the law, police.
Yes, that's one of the most striking stories, and I believe that was written by Brenda Warnick.
Over on the right is a looks like a Depression-era couple. Okies or Arkies or maybe, I don't know.
That's a family
and a baby.
Yeah, the lady has a story in the book.
Wow.
And then...
The lady with the two black poodles?
That's Arlene. And
That's Arlene Oostlander.
Yes.
Who put the book together. So she has a...
Yeah, she and Brenda working together put the book together. Yeah.
All right. The sort of stories, the sort of guests that you hear on Dugan's program on Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock call, Tell Me Your Story. You've told us yours. You grew up with Grandpa, I assume.
Well, we visited a lot.
Okay, where was he?
He lived in San Fernando.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, his address was 1317 Hewitt Street. And your address here is 1317 Santa Barbara.
That's funny.
Isn't it?
Not hard to remember then.
Synchronicity.
I guess so. How many people did we lose in that earthquake? Do you know?
There was approximately close to 100 people.
Okay.
There were 1,000 that were injured.
Injured around the... And places collapsed. I remember some carports you were talking about in apartment buildings.
Yes.
Pancaked right down into the cars and the people. So as far as we're concerned, for all intents and purposes, that was the big one for that era, for that early 70s, wasn't it?
For that era,
it
yes.
It up here. I think I was on KIST at the time, and it shook the building, top floor of the Balboa building. Heaven forbid, knock on wood, the other one could happen at any time.
We learned from each event. I know, like, I wasn't there. My dad remembered this earthquake and told me about it often. It was the Long Beach 1933 earthquake.
Oh.
He experienced that, and I've read about it, and it was 120 people who died as a result of that earthquake, and 90% of them died either because they were running in or running out of a building while the severe ground shaking was occurring.
You know, I've never heard of that one, Long Beach.
Yeah.
Name doesn't, you know, there's the Alaska, there's a different one. We had one here in 26.
Yes.
Which very few people remember. I've had some guests on in their 80s or 90s that do remember that one that wiped out half of our town. But I guess Long Beach was the center, what's it called, ground zero or whatever, the center, epicenter. That's the word I'm looking for. What are you writing nowadays?
I'm currently have a 30 different manuscripts that can,
30?
Yeah, that could stand by themselves. When I say that, I'm talking about short stories that are anywhere from 1,200 to 3,000 words. And so I'm working on segueing the stories or just putting them together as an anthology, a collection of stories.
Do that. Do your, what's it called, desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Put out your own book. Are they real-life stories or are they fiction?
You know, mine are real-life stories because I'm still at the very beginning of the learning curve as far as creative writing. It's easier for me to take a real event and write about it rather than to create one.
Mm-hmm. Are they stories about your own personal life?
Yes.
Okay, things that have happened to you.
Yes.
Any of them is metaphysical or weird or ironic? Synchronic?
I have quite a few of them that are my favorite, but I think that The Starting Blocks is a story that I wrote about my son, John. And I have two wonderful sons, and I'm very proud of both of them, but John nearly died at birth. Everything seemed to be fine until about 5 minutes after he was born. His chest began to cave in, and we discovered that his lungs were not fully developed. So that is, as my wife Connie would say, a defining moment.
Sure.
in my life. And the moments and weeks and months that followed, its impact. Now, John survived.
He did survive,
and so you can imagine what I felt like when he was in high school and running track and cross country.
Yeah,
I can tell you, I didn't miss one single race. Every race was a celebration of life. And so one of my stories is about John.
Running a race?
It starts with his...
Winning or losing?
No, actually, it's really... He won.
He won the race?
He won the race,
wow.
But in my story... the starting blocks.
Well,
the gun is fired, and you see a wave of young men running in front of cameras for pictures to be taken as they start.
Mm-hmm.
And an old gentleman stands beside me and says, is that your boy powering down the track? Yes, I said,
that's my son, John.
Well, I think he's going to win this one.
The premature baby.
And I said... He's already won.
Yeah.
And the story goes on, but...
God, I'm going to lump in my throat just hearing about it. Yeah.
I have one, the reading lesson.
The reading lesson.
Yes,
the
reading. That's the title.
That's
the reading
another
lesson.
Short story, nonfiction.
A short story.
Okay.
And basically, my dad wanted very much for me to embrace our culture and to be bilingual. And I do speak, read, and write Spanish.
Okay.
But my first language was Spanish because he decided that I was not to speak any English at all until I started school.
Oh, is
so,
that right?
So when I started school, I didn't know one word of English.
You went in with a real handicap.
Well, there was something else going on that no one else knew until I was in junior high school, the first week in junior high school. And that was that my vision was... 2600. I was legally blind.
Oh, no kidding.
And the only way I got through, the way I got through school was that I learned to be a really good listener. And I tell you, as such, you sit at a table and you're a good listener and you are accumulating stories of people that you know and respect and love. And, I used to listen to my dad talk about his experiences during World War II, and many of them are still very...
Did he go overseas and see
combat? Was a sailor.
Oh, he was on board a ship.
He was aboard the USS Croton, which was a jeep carrier, a BB flat top, in the North Atlantic. Yeah.
Did he see action?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the first assignment of the Croton was to take supplies and munitions to George Patton, General George Patton,
Ooh,
in North Africa.
There you go.
But right after that, an operation was put into effect where there was a seek, search, and destroy missions for the baby flat tops in the North Atlantic because we were having a great deal of problems with the German U-boats.
Oh, yeah. They certainly gave us a problem. And we had several carriers there.
Oh, yes.
The carriers normally had a way to fight them off, didn't they? They didn't bring down too many carriers. I don't think they...
Well, what helped the carriers were the aircraft.
The airplanes would spot them. And
yeah. The best way to spot a submarine in the 1940s during WW2 was from the air.
Was from the air. They'd actually see them under the water.
Yes. They couldn't go... the range was limited from land-based aircraft, so that's why the jeep carriers were important.
But your dad was on a jeep carrier, or jeep, whatever,
transported jeeps. Yeah, it's a BB flat top.
Oh, okay, so it didn't have aircraft, but it...
Oh, it did.
Oh, it did have
it
aircraft.
It did, yes. It had, they would launch planes.
Interesting. And Dad was, a non-English speaking?
No, Dad spoke English perfectly.
Oh, but he didn't want you to grow up learning.
Well,
that's funny.
No, it's not that he didn't want me to learn to speak English. He wanted me to learn to speak Spanish really well. And, you know, in hindsight, when I look at my nursing career and how I was able to help many doctors and many nurses with non-English speaking patients, it was really, you know, a wonderful gift. Yeah.
I don't know how many people realize this besides yourself, and I know it, but learning Spanish, if you don't know Spanish, is infinitely easier than learning English, because our language is just fraught with stupid, silly, the ways you can pronounce O-U-G-H-T, fraught, bought, bow, cough. There's a jillion different ways to pronounce certain words, and that doesn't happen in Spanish. If you see letters in a row, they're pronounced only one way, you know? And I often wonder if in the Hispanic world they have the kids saying the Spanish version of like and you know and I mean. They don't do that, do they, in Spanish universities? They're not all going like, it's like, I did like, you know, in Spanish. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's like a free-for-all up here, and in the English world, it's just anarchy. So, I put the Spanish language channels on and watched the judge shows and the soap operas in Spanish, and I'm starting to pick up quite a bit, learning part of the world.
But it's a great way to learn the language is to listen to the programming.
Is your beautiful wife, Connie, Hispanic?
She is Armenian. She's born in the States, but...
Does she speak any Spanish? Did you teach her any?
You know, she understands every single word, and she can read it. But I try to get her to speak it,
and doesn't happen.
No.
Is she shy?
She is shy. She wants to say something to me in Spanish, she can get it out.
Well, would she ever come to lunch with you so we can meet this
Absolutely.
Woman of your life? How many years again?
We've been married 27 years.
Oh, they're starting to get serious about each other.
I married her twice.
Oh.
Because marrying her once, for me, wasn't good enough.
All right. That's great. We're going to get that story and others. Coming up around the corner, we'll take a break. Our number is 564-1290. Ray Duarte, Ramon, with a great story in the Mystery of Fate book. Don't go away. Good morning, everybody. It's Ray Duarte's time on the radio. He's in the book Real People, Real Stories, which is The Mystery of Fate. That's the official title, Common Coincidence or Divine Intervention. If you just tuned in, you missed a heartwarming story about attending his grandpa's funeral, which saved his life in the Northridge earthquake services and whatnot. We learn about Connie, his bride of
27.
And the fact that you are published in Jack Canfield's Chicken Soup series. He's got a bunch of those. I'm not sure. I've read some of them. I met him once at a seminar that I played music for out at the university. You haven't met him yet, but you've been published in his book.
Yes.
Right? Which Chicken Soup was it? Do you remember?
It's Chicken Soup for the Soul, Love Stories, that was published in February of 2008.
Love Stories. What's his premise? What does Chicken Soup mean? These are good things. Solve me.
These are... when you're not feeling well, you have chicken soup to feel better.
There you go.
These are feel better stories.
I got you. And you wrote one. You contributed one.
Yes.
Do you have it in front of you?
Yes, I do.
What's it called?
It's entitled Forever Smile.
It's not about you and your wife, is it?
Yes, it is. It's about how I met Connie. In fact, I met her mom before I ever met Connie.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Because her mom was a patient I was caring for at an outpatient dialysis center, and she's very special, and I feel very deeply for her. After about a year of sizing me out, she pulls out her wallet, and she shows me a picture of Connie, and I go, Ann, she's beautiful.
Ah.
You know, and she has your smile.
Oh, her
and,
daughter.
You know, if I'm lucky, I'll get to meet her, maybe ask her out to dinner. She says yes. We'll go to a show, and by next Christmas, we'll have grandchildren for you.
Oh, my God, you said that to Mom?
Yes, I did.
Lord.
And what? She giggled, so I knew that...
and you wrote that. That's
basically the story.
Give your grandchildren. What a line. You haven't even met her yet?
Well, you know, the thing is that I wanted so much for her to accept my proposal of marriage. And
did you do anything special, or were you down on your knees?
Well, what I did, which I think was special, was to find different ways of saying, I love you, will you marry me? And finally, I said to her one evening, do you know that the word yes is like a smile that lasts forever?
Oh, my God. What a line. Jeez.
And that's why the title of this short story, Forever Smile.
Well, if she'd said no, that would have gone that theory. It'd be a totally different life for this heartbroken man.
Yes.
Fortunately, she said yes, and then did bear two grandchild.
Yeah. I actually have to share with you that my sons are from a previous marriage.
Oh, that's right. So 22-year, they're in their 30s, aren't they?
Yes, David's 35.
I knew that. I was watching Lifetime for Women. It's the Ray Duarte years. Five-night miniseries on Channel 41. When he met Connie.
But she's a great stepmom, I'll tell you that.
Really?
My sons, really.
Were they teenagers or younger than
they
that?
They were young, actually.
They were even younger than that.
Let's see. David was 8 and John was 5 when they met Connie.
Okay. And did you say she was also a professional helper? Or did she
took care of her mom very well. But she has a degree from UCLA as a administrative person, and she's worked as an administrative assistant to various different.
Okay, but you have the RN.
I have the RN
to your name, and an LVN. Did you get one of
those? Well, once you get your RN, you can keep the LVN if you'd like.
Replaces. You can do all the things an LVN does as an RN.
Yes. So you really don't have to have your LVN renewed after you've gotten your RN.
Would you have gone on for doctor if you hadn't had your knee problems come along? Whatever that was, it happened. What happened? Maybe you could tell us. What did in your knees, Ray?
Well, I'll tell you. You look at your life and you ascertain what is it that's most important. What is it that comes first? And what is it that comes first is always family.
Sure.
And so I had already been accepted, and I was attending classes at Pepperdine University, Malibu. And I was going to get a degree in biology there and then apply to med school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can't hurt.
But what had happened was that David came around and... It was more important.
That, again.
It was more important to take care of David and his mom than it was for me to finish school.
So, what happened to your knees?
Oh well, that came years later.
Playing basketball, you
actually
you were skiing at Aspen. There's a story there, folks.
Yeah,
I
tell you, I had this dog, and he's the best boy dog I ever met. And his name was Duke, and Duke was very politely asked to be taken out. And one night, I went outside with him in our backyard, which is looks like.
Ouch! I don't even want to hear it. I feel it coming.
No, the yard's in good shape, but the lawn is it has a lot of gopher holes in it.
Oh,
because our house backs up to a green belt. And I stepped into one of those gopher holes and tore a meniscus in my knee.
Last week, we were waiting for my crazy sister. You talk about family. She came to town with her husband in their 30-foot RV, and I'm getting them checked into the Carpinteria State Park down there, which is probably the best place to park an RV in the whole state of California. The beach is right there.
Mm-hmm.
We're waiting. They're over at the stand, and I got my granddaughter. She's 27 months, 2 years, 3 months old.
Wow.
And her mother, and we're standing there, and there's gopher holes, and one popped his head up. Now, we also had control of their dog, a big boxer, a great Dane body and a bulldog face, and it's all over the place, but never sees the gopher. And that little gopher kept popping its head up and came out once, and the little girl saw it, I saw it, Mom saw it. Anyway, gopher holes, that's what did in your knees.
Yes.
And along with the birth of David, your firstborn.
Uh-huh.
Your medical career as Dr. Duarte, do you ever regret?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
I believe I compensated for it because, see, the primary feeling was to make things better in an industry that was growing, and there were still a lot of unanswered questions. And so I, because I have that type of mind that likes critical thinking and writing, I found myself doing independent nursing research and contributed to the art, if you will. And that, being able to see the result of the work that I did directly to make things better for the patients I care for, improve their situation, was ample for me to feel achievement. There was no need for me to go on to med school.
That would be your abstract writing, right?
Yes, abstract, and then I have 9 manuscripts that were printed in refereed journals, like the American Society for Artificial Internal Organs, ASAIO.
Wow.
And there's kind of a neat story behind that, because I submitted my application for membership in 1979, and it's a group of MDs and PhDs only. And so I got a very nice letter back, and they were asking me, Mr. Duarte, why is it that you, a nurse, would want to be a part of a group of scientists and MDs and PhDs? And so I wrote back with copies of the material that I was working on. I simply said, I am an independent nurse researcher.
Oh.
And I'm looking for another venue by which to publish my work, and here are examples of some of the work I'm doing right now. And then a few months later, I was accepted as a member. And I am the first RN to become a member.
You're kidding.
Of ASIO, really? Yes.
And you don't, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe you have any writing degrees, technically. You
no, I'm all self-taught.
Wow.
See, I'll tell you, the thing about, you know, my grades in the first weeks of junior high school went from C's and D's to A's and B's once I could see.
Once you could see?
One, yes, because I was legally blind.
You told me. What did you say, 26,000 or 600?
2,600.
That mean one eye is okay, the 20? Or does that mean both of them are?
No, both of them were bad.
Both of them bad. Was it glasses?
Yes, all I needed was glasses, and the entire universe opened up. And in particular, you know, everything was just wonderful. Literature, history, science, I was just like this kid that just wanted to read everything. Yeah.
Before that, you couldn't see anything? It was all a blur?
No, it was a blur. I could see, you know, general shapes. You know, we're no more than maybe 4 feet away from each other. Without glasses, I couldn't make out the features of your face.
And so as a young man growing up, you had no glasses. You just
Not in the grammar school.
Dealt with the world with...
From kindergarten to grade 6, nothing.
You're still 2,600.
No, I actually I had LASIK surgery in 2003.
Oh, you finally did. Well, you're wearing spectacles now.
Yeah, they're reading glasses, just over-the-counter reading glasses.
I see.
Yeah, I don't need them for driving, and it's just for reading.
But that along with your decision, I don't know how much your dad got behind that decision to change away from the Spanish he insisted you use in your early years, that and the decision to embrace English has really changed you a lot, hasn't it?
Yes.
Because there's a lot of people that consider it a real handicap, you know, in the little Cesar Chavez school down here. Have you been following their problem? They didn't do well. They closed it down, renamed it, because a lot of the students don't speak English, or they're bilingual, if you will. Nothing wrong with being bilingual, but you got to know the rules, and it's like a mental version of your blindness you were talking about there.
Yeah, his intent was for me to be bilingual.
Why? Is he gone, long gone?
Yeah, he passed away in 91.
And your mother, too? And
my mom is 82 years old and going strong.
Listen, God, Ray, so are you. And we'll be seeing you at the luncheons and seeing you around town, and might read some of your stuff in the future. Might even be abstract. I appreciate it. We'll get you a copy of this hour, and we're going to have you on again.
Thank you, Ray.
Maybe
thank
a you. Compatible couple, Ray and Connie Duarte.
There you go.
We'll be here. See you at lunch. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.